This episode of I Ride a Bike is supported in part by Allspeed, the official bike shop of the podcast. With convenient locations in Portland, Bethel, and Carrabassett Valley, Maine, Allspeed is the local shop for everything bike. For more information and to check out their latest hot deals, please visit allspeed.com.
All through. So that's what I'm doing. I actually start on Monday. So I'm unemployed right now.
Right on, man. Wow, that's exciting. So this is your last week of, like, quote-unquote sort of freedom, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you've got some waves recently. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's been good.
That's cool. That's awesome, man. All right, so the microphone, you want to be about this close when you're talking, if possible.
Yep.
This table's a little awkward.
No, it's all right.
You want to sit kitty corner to it or something like that, but whatever works. Best for you, man.
That one you'll dedicate to all the bicycle riders in. Bicycle rider, bicycle rider.
Bike rider. Hi, I'm Seth Ballier, the host of I Ride a Bike. For each episode, we'll explore one basic premise: to never grow old, one ride at a time, and the stories that follow. Today, I'm back in the garage slash bike depot slash surfboard depot slash everything that doesn't fit in the house depot. It's a little bit nicer day than when I was here with Jamie, but definitely getting chilly here on November 3rd. I'm sitting out here and lucky enough to have John McGonigal visiting me today, another Portland native, but now a self-proclaimed nomad who's been lucky enough to travel and not have to live in one place for the past 15 years, though I do hear rumblings of a real full-time job starting up in the next week or something like that. But welcome to the podcast, John. Thanks for coming in.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to kick things off with the basic question for you. Why do you ride a bike, John?
I ride a bike because I am not very good at sitting still, and I love always moving in forward motion. And riding a bike, since I have learned to ride a bike at age 4, has always made me feel like a 4-year-old. So I've always, always loved moving and having a fountain of youth, and always feeling like a little kid when I ride a bike, no matter what kind of bike, where I'm going, or how far I'm going, even if it's 100 yards down to get a candy bar, it always makes me feel like a little kid.
Yeah, right on. And sometimes riding a bike just to go get a candy bar, I mean, you can't be anything much more kid-like than heading down to Cumbie's to grab a snack, right?
Exactly. Can't beat it.
Except for these days, you got to have security with you to leave your bike outside.
Locks. Locks, locks, locks.
Yeah, right. Seriously, though. So you're from Portland, Maine. I know you grew up in the Deering neighborhood, Katie and her older brother Cliff and that crew. What was that like growing up in Portland as a kid?
It was great. Portland was a great place to grow up. Lived in a really suburban neighborhood. Lots of friends right around, school right there, candy store right down the street, and just a great place to be, safe. Couldn't ask for a better place, right near the ocean, right near the beaches. Couldn't ask for a better place to grow up other than Portland.
Yeah, right on. And so you said you learned to ride bikes when you were 4. Do you remember that actual experience of your first bike ride?
I do. I got a bike for Christmas and had training wheels on it. And I have a couple of siblings, so we were all trying out the bike and crashing and making fun of each other for crashing. And
oldest or youngest?
I'm in the middle.
Yeah.
So my older brother was better at riding a bike than me. My sister was about on par, and my little brother wasn't quite there yet.
Yeah.
Just got a bike at age 4 and tried to cruise it around the neighborhood and not crash as much as possible.
And, it came with training wheels on it.
Training wheels.
Do you remember what the bike was, or?
I think it was a Huffy.
Yeah,
had the little things on the spokes.
When you can't remember what it was, just say Huffy.
Yeah, exactly. Had the little things on the spokes and had the little protector on the crossbar and over the handlebars for protecting the goods. And just a little teeny bike that I was just trying to get good on, and it took me quite a while. And eventually I did, and just took off with it.
Right on. That's great. So you just rode around the neighborhood. Deering neighborhood's a great place, pretty residential. So it was probably the next spring or summer, turning 5 years old, out there with a gang of kids.
Yeah, so many kids in the neighborhood, all over the place, streets next to us, tons of kids. Everybody had bikes. no cell phones at the time. And, you know, in the summertime when our parents would be working or we'd have babysitters, we would just all get together and go to someone's house and pretty much do bike adventures around the neighborhood to everyone's house, play some sports, play some basketball, and then just keep going to everybody's house and pick more people up along the way.
Did you ever have a name for your bike crew?
Never had a name for the bike crew back in the day. I have names for the bike crews I'm in now, but not back in the day.
All right, we'll get to that in a little while then.
All right.
All right, cool. That's great. I'm trying to remember back. When did kids start wearing helmets when they were riding bikes? Did you have a helmet when you were 4 or 5?
I did not have a helmet until I think I was in 3rd grade. And the only reason I did was because some bike helmet coalition or maybe bike salesperson came into Longfellow School and gave a big presentation on the importance of bike helmets. But up until then, I certainly didn't, and I don't think any of my friends wore a helmet or even talked about having a helmet.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. The first helmet I ever wore probably was maybe when I was in my early 20s, you know? It's like I just never had helmets. I mean, when I started first mountain biking, really, I mean, never in high school, but high school for me was late 80s, early 90s. Yep. So no helmets at all. But I do remember I had this yellow BMX bike, 12, 13 years old, and we lived on a dirt road in the middle of nowhere. But I remember my dad came home one day and he was adamant, because we had people who just fly by our house 100 miles an hour down this dirt road. And he, you know, I understand it now as an adult, but he was so worried for us kids out there riding bikes on these dirt roads. And he was hell-bent for a little while, and somehow we defeated this. He wanted to put these, like, 8-foot-tall flags on the backs of our BMX bikes. So we would look like, you know, bumper cars or something like that flying down the road. But that would have been the safety precaution then, but it got nixed.
and when we did wear the helmets, I would say at least 60% of the crew who wore helmets wore them backwards, and not on purpose. We just didn't know because nobody wore helmets back then.
Sure, they didn't have the visor indicating the front for sure.
Yeah. No, and nobody knew, and nobody, you know. Yeah. Today, if you do that, you get made fun of things like that. But back then, nobody.
Well, nowadays you go on those kook rides and you put it on backwards on purpose.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
You try to look like an idiot.
So. Exactly.
Yeah, that's a lot of fun. So you had that bike when you were 5 or 6 or something like that. Do you remember like a first bike that really stood out to you? Like it was like, now that you were a bike rider, were you like circling things in like the catalogs and like, this is the bike I want to get for Christmas someday?
Yeah. So my grandmother, who lived in South Portland, she lived down the street from some kind of old weird guy who had a lot of bicycles in his large garage slash barn, and he would build out bikes for all the kids in the neighborhood. But it was similar to bikes you'd see at the dump, all just very cheap Huffies and Magnas and just Walmart and Bradley's and department store bikes. And he let me go into his garage and check out the bike situation, and I saw this blue Huffy road bike, like racing style bike that it was really good, cool blue color, kind of like the sirens on a police car, that color blue.
Yeah, right.
And I thought it was the coolest thing ever. Had no padding on the seat, just straight metal. And he greased up the chain and pumped up the tires, and he gave it to me. And I remember for 2 years. The first 2 years I had that thing, every second I got out of school, I would just jump on that thing and ride it as fast as I possibly could.
Right.
And my parents would yell at me for getting home late. And it was such a junky bike. It was covered in rust. It was old. But I would just always try and ride that thing as fast as I could. And I would always try and race people any time that I had.
That's awesome. Wait, so was it a kid-sized bike then? Or
it was a kid-sized Huffy.
Yeah,
yes.
Okay. But road, like a road bike, though.
But a road bike, skinny tires.
Yeah. Did it have drop bars on it?
It had the drop bars, and they
were
cool color.
On. Yeah.
Yep, and it had the shifters like up on the stem that were really old school. They were really long, and it weighed 1,000,000 pounds and got a lot of flat tires, and it was just a little speed racer.
Oh, that's great. Were you able to then, as you advanced in your age or whatever, able to take that on some adventures at all?
I took it on a couple failed adventures.
Yeah.
Any
that stood out to you?
My friends and I heard that one of their parents, when they were our age, which was probably 10 years old, they rode their bikes to Sebago Lake one time and went swimming. And so we thought we would give that a whirl. So we rode it to Sebago Lake, and which was probably about 25 or 30 miles or something around that length. And we got about probably...
And a bit of a sketchy road.
Very sketchy going down Route 302. And we got about 6 miles away, and we knocked on someone's door to call our parents to come pick us up because we were exhausted.
Did you get permission to do that ride, or were you just like, all right, guys, let's hit it?
We did get permission for it. Our parents weren't psyched on it, but they were around the house by the phone, probably expecting something like that.
So you were around 10 as well then?
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, yep, I think I was in fourth grade.
Right on, yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that might have been a taste of the first, the nomad, taking off and just heading off, right?
Yeah, and that was what it was like, because I remember driving down that road to, go skiing or go to people's cabins, and at that age, everything felt like it was 1,000 miles away.
Sure, yeah.
So going a little bit down the road and going past, old scary barn houses that I saw, made me feel like I was going across the world when really I was one town over from Portland.
Right. But like you said, everything, when you're that age, everything is so much bigger. The world is the size of a galaxy when you're 10 years old.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. That's amazing. I love that, the adventurous spirit and parents that support that. I mean, I think these days it's unfortunate, not necessarily blaming the parents, but, that kids don't really do that anymore. Maybe if you grew up out in the country still, you're still allowed to do those same things or similar things, but there's no way that a parent would let their 10-year-old ride from Portland to Sebago Lake right now.
Never. And it's so crazy because it's with the
and
time.
And no cell phone or anything. You just took off.
Exactly. And with these days, with the bicycle thing is that back in the day, you would go to someone's house and you'd know that your friends were there because you'd see their bicycle outside their house. But now it's not like that anymore because kids don't ride bicycles like we used to.
Yeah, I mean, it's synonymous with most people that I've talked to, and that's one of the reasons that I enjoy doing this podcast, is that bikes for me is synonymous with being a kid.
Exactly.
I can't imagine a childhood without a bike. It doesn't make sense to me. It doesn't register. It makes my brain start to tweak out a little bit.
Couldn't agree more.
Yeah. And having siblings that ride bikes and friends and a crew, and it all just adds together. And, it's maybe things will come back around at some point. I don't know.
Let's hope so.
Yeah. I mean, I know that a lot of adults are rediscovering bikes, which is another thing that I'm excited to be possibly a part of sharing, getting people stoked on remembering what it's like to ride a bike and getting out there and dusting off the old, pumping up the tires and greasing up the chain and trying to take it out there.
Totally.
It's a lot of fun. I found another group I've been following. I think it's called Old Guys Who Ride or something like that. And it's just a bunch of 50-year-olds with videos of themselves on their BMX bike that they had 30 years ago trying to do the same tricks they did 35, 40 years ago. And it's just awesome because everyone is like sharing broken bone stories, but at the same time sharing these videos of them still able to do it. And the stoke level is just, it's out of control. It's so great.
That's amazing.
Yeah, for sure. From the time you had that Huffy road bike then and you were adventuring around, did you just continually ride bikes all the way up until the present day?
So after I got that bike, I was really excited about riding it all over the place. But then mountain bikes started getting a little bit more popular and a little bit more advanced. And my parents would always try to help me with better behavior, reward me with things. So for a couple of years, I chipped away at them to get
a nice roundabout way of saying they bribed you with bikes. But
they bribed me with bicycles, and I really wanted a Schwinn mountain bike. It was before Schwinn sold out to the Walmart chains and became a little bit lower quality. And my parents got me my first mountain bike, and everybody was starting to ride on just local trails around Portland. And I got this Schwinn High Timber. It was $400 20 years ago, which back in the day for a bicycle, that was pretty expensive for my parents, who were very average status with a bunch of other kids, to buy a $400 bicycle. Yeah. And that was just a whole repeat of when I got my speed racer Huffy, except in the woods. So I remember I took it up to Sunday River and went downhill biking with a mountain bike with no shocks. Was it full rigid? Full rigid, full rigid. But I didn't care. I was in grade six, so maybe I was 12 or 13. And that was just awesome because I would ride down the train tracks and connect to all the four river trails around Portland and just take it as many places as I could. I would ride it around in the snow. And then I would just, I was starting to ride the mountain bike further distances on the road or on the trails. And that's when I started riding it to friends' houses for sleepovers. And that is when I really saw the light in the beginning of bike touring.
Right on. Yeah, that's cool. That's cool. Did you take any bike tours on that bike? I mean, did you do any, you know, quote unquote, bike packing?
With my book pack from L.L. Bean, I would just go to my friends' houses on the weekend and sleep over their house and then bike back the following day.
Yeah.
But that still is bike packing.
Sure.
And that was the start of it that really got me excited, which made me feel like a little kid.
Yeah.
It was the most fun things as a kid are, what for me, were sleeping over friends' houses and going camping and riding my bike and having the bike, doing that all on a bicycle, incorporated all of my favorite things into one and was free, and I didn't need anyone else to do it except myself.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, I can't imagine how good you must have been for your parents to then buy you a $400 bike. I mean, or the setup for that whole scenario, but good on them and good on you for making all that happen.
Yeah, so I was pumped.
Yeah. And how long did you have that bike?
I had that bike until I was about 18.
Oh, yeah, right on.
And then I sold it to someone else, and that's when I went off to college.
Right on. Yep. Yep. Did you have a bike during college years?
I didn't have a bicycle in college until my senior year of college. I was on the track team, and I was running competitively, Division I, and I was running 100 miles a week for 50 weeks a year, and I was pretty tired to be riding a bicycle all the time. So rather than riding a bicycle around campus to get to class, I would skateboard because it was easy and it would not get stolen.
Right, sure. Yeah. Did you have a, during those three plus years then with the, no bike, did you have a yearning though to have a bike? Or did you ever like miss it that you just like fall asleep and start dreaming like, I want to be out in the woods riding a bike?
I did, and when I was running competitively, we would run on trails the whole time, and I would just see all of these bike clubs up in Orono, Maine, Orono and Old Town, Maine, just all these mountain bikers ripping and having a blast, as all mountain bike groups do, and I was just running my brains out and being the skinniest person ever because I was running so far, and I would just see all these bikers, and the trails up there are very, very, very nice, and I was just always jealous of seeing these guys just cranking around the trails all year round.
Right, they're flying by you, you know, hooting and hollering, and you're just trudging through the woods in a suffer fest of running, right?
Exactly, and they would always make a funny comment about our tiny shorts, too.
Probably with some fairness to it, though, right?
Exactly. They were small.
Yeah. And then after college, what was your when did you get back into biking then after college?
So after college, during college, between my junior and senior year, I lifeguarded in Cape Cod, Massachusetts, and I worked with a lot of triathletes, a lot of triathlete trainers, a lot of competitive Ironman triathletes, and the bike scene started coming out of left field again at me, and I got really excited, and because I was a runner, they convinced me to buy a road bike and try a triathlon. So my senior year of college, all of my book money that my parents gave me for my textbooks, I pocketed, and I went to L.L. Bean because I didn't know other bike shops around, high-end triathlon bike shops, and I bought my first Primo Full Carbon Specialized Roubaix for $2,500.
Oh, shit, right, yeah.
And my parents never found out about it and still don't know about it until maybe they hear this podcast.
Oh my God, that's great.
That I used all my textbook money to buy the bike. And then what I didn't realize is after I bought a $2,500 bike, I had to put another $1,200 into it to make it what I needed it to be. Right. And then after my last season of competitive running, I was just back to biking as much as I possibly could, as fast as I could, as often as I possibly could get out on it.
Yeah. But how did you buy the books, though?
I didn't.
You didn't?
I went without books.
Really? No kidding. I mean, you still graduated from college, though, right?
Yeah. To be honest, my grades got better. I didn't read the books. I just read the PowerPoints and all of the more important stuff. And I wish I did it earlier, but I got a bicycle out of it.
See, the kids out there, if you're listening right now, go buy a bike, get some exercise, and then just pay attention.
Exactly.
It works out way better.
Agreed.
Because so now you've graduated college and you have this $2,500 bike that you've upgraded and been riding, getting back into riding pretty heavily. What was the next stage of your life and riding and things like that?
So after college, I did exactly what my parents did, told me to do, and all my friends were doing. I went and got an internship in New York City with a company who was based out of New York City as well as Boston, and was working long days and slaving away and then going out to corporate dinners at night. And it was great, and it was great paying and good opportunity. But what I missed most about it was I was not running on trails any longer, and I was not riding a bicycle.
Just admit it. You just missed the short shorts, pretty much.
I missed running around in the short shorts advertising, and I could not do that in New York City. I didn't have the mojo back then quite yet.
Yeah, right on. All right. So then, how long were you in New York then? I mean, was it started to get to the point where you just kind of were not digging the city anymore and that lifestyle?
I was just in New York for about 1 month, and I was in Boston for about 1 month.
Okay,
it was a short internship.
Oh, you said it was an internship.
It was just a quick internship with a company, and once they offered me the position, I realized that that was not the life for me, and I missed doing what I love the most, and I said, thank you, but no thank you. And I packed up my 1992 Honda Civic with my bicycle, and I drove it to Key West.
Right on, yeah. What did your parents think about that decision?
They were not the most excited about it, but they weren't hating on me for it either. They said, as long as you can support yourself and be happy and healthy and stay out of trouble, then follow your dreams.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, it sounds from when they're letting you ride towards Sebago at 10 years old, it sounds like they pretty much knew, you were on your own path of some sort anyway. So
exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. So headed to Key West, nice change of pace from the cold Maine winters. What was it like down in there?
So Key West was my first introduction into the great big world. I didn't realize that you could ride a bicycle all year round comfortably in Florida weather, flat, paved, no pothole kind of roads.
Right.
I was slowly getting into triathlons at this point, and I was open water swimming in the ocean, paddleboarding, running a lot, and riding my bicycle up and down Route 1 in Florida up the Keys, which was beautiful and scenic, and lots of other really fancy triathletes riding their bikes and bike tourers coming in from all over the country and going out from all kinds of places, and just more riding my bike and working on a sailboat and warm weather all year round was the introduction into the great wide open world for me.
Why Key West though? Was there some thing that drew you there, or was it just you threw a dart and hit it on the map? Or
I had some friends who encouraged me to move down there because there was a really good boating scene. And growing up in Portland, Maine, I always had a passion for boats as well.
Mm-hmm.
And they said that instead of going to work at a company in New York City, if you want to do something really fun that will still pay a lot of money, to go try and work on a sailboat down in Key West. And that's what I did. And it was a very busy time when lots and lots of tourists are going down. Yep. And so I decided to give it a whirl and give it a shot. And I knew one person down there and went down and crashed with them for a couple of days and then found my own spot and got a job on a boat within a couple of weeks.
Right on. That sounds great. And you enjoy it pretty much from day one?
Loved it. It's still to this day, it's the best job I've ever had.
Really? Yeah.
Just go out on a sailboat out to the reef, 7 miles out into the open ocean, and go snorkeling 3 times a day, ride jet skis around, go parasailing, meet lots of babes.
Doesn't suck.
And ride my bicycle every single day.
Yeah. Wow. It sounds pretty fantastic for sure.
It was not bad.
Yeah. It's one of those things you just got to keep in your mind's eye for those days. It's cold and dreary. Just remember back to that and you feel it, right?
Exactly. And I never drove my car ever being down there. I would only commute to and from work on a bicycle. Pretty much every single night we would get the whole crew from the boat and we would all get on our bikes and skateboards and go out for dinner and go out for drinks and go out for concerts and never worrying about parking spots and just keeping the bicycle tradition alive that just never seemed to leave me.
Yeah, right on. And then so you were saying at the beginning, 15 years you've been a nomad, so I guess that was pretty much the start of the nomadic life for you.
That was the step one.
What were the next steps in that?
So after being in Key West and getting a full winter of endurance training on the bicycle and having a blast, I realized that I wanted to take my cycling to the next level, and I moved to Arizona. And I moved to Scottsdale, Arizona, because it was a huge triathlon hub with a lot of professionals who trained out there, really phenomenal mountain biking and world-class road biking. And I moved out there and just got some remedial job and just rode my bicycle as much as I could, commuted to and from work, joined a couple bike clubs, a couple of triathlon clubs, and just pedaled a lot.
So it sounds to me like from that point, you're basically your lifestyle where you paid bills was secondary to what you were doing with your days to enjoy life.
Exactly. Bicycling, running, and swimming were always my first priority, and working was my second priority. I just worked enough to be able to ride my bike and run as far as I possibly could.
It's a nice place to be, right?
It was great, and the community there for cycling was top notch.
Yeah, and probably you were surrounded by a lot of like-minded people that were doing a very similar thing.
Exactly. Every day there was a group ride that would go out that would have sometimes 150 people every single day. You could always find a group ride morning, noon, or after work every single day of the whole week.
Bicycle ride, bicycle ride.
There's a legend about the race between Medicine Mike and the guy who rode the Baja bike. That's Baja by Murray, that thumb-shifting 10-speed with pro-style cantilever brakes, all-terrain tires, and the grit to get you from timber to town. They raced from the hills to the center of town, and when Medicine Mike finally settled down, he said, "Don't think I was racing, son. I just wanted to see that Baja run." If a legend's what you're looking for, Murray gives you more.
Finally, the days of having dirt back under the tires is upon us. Well, maybe some mud and a few sketchy potholes, but it's spring, and I for one am stoked. And to get you ready for another great season, all you have to do is stop by AllSpeed's amazing new flagship store, conveniently located right off the Portland Trail System at 936 Brighton Avenue. In addition to a full range of bikes and accessories for riders of all levels, the super friendly staff at AllSpeed is ready to help with everything from your basic spring tune-up to a full custom build. And be sure to keep an eye out for a season of fun events, parties, and shenanigans. With convenient locations in Portland, Carabasset Valley, and Bethel, Maine, AllSpeed is the local shop for everything bike. For more information and to check out their latest hot deals, please visit allspeed.com. AllSpeed, the official bike shop of the podcast. All right, we're back here after a quick refill of the coffee and the tea to keep ourselves warm out here in the garage. While we were in there, you started telling me about a story back in the Arizona days. Why don't you talk a little bit about that? You're off for a nice long ride in a new area, searching for some solitude, and how'd that go?
So I was biking around Scottsdale and Phoenix area, which are road bike mecca of the world. However, parts of it have a heavy amount of traffic, and I was starting to get fed up with the heavy amounts of traffic. So I went on to the east side of the giant highway to these long, flat, untrafficked roads in the middle of nowhere that were nice and peaceful and quiet. And I would go do time trials out there and incorporate interval training into my workouts, where one time I was pedaling and a pack of about five dogs, what I thought they were, came out and lurched out at me, and then started chasing me.
Did you see him come in, or was it out of nowhere? You're just head down pedaling, and all of a sudden they were there.
I did not see them coming because they were, I guess, hiding in a ditch on the side of the road, and they came at me pretty hard, and they took a lurch at me, and then I started pedaling away. When I first started pedaling away, I did not think that they were going to be right behind me, and they stayed right on my wheel for probably 3 to 4 miles.
That's insane.
3 to 4 miles. This was in my prime triathlon training shape. I was casually going for 100-mile rides every week.
Right.
I was down in the aero position with a heart rate monitor, going between 30 and 35 miles an hour, and these dogs were not giving up. And I was starting to question myself in panic after 3 miles of these dogs being 2 feet off of my tire. So eventually, after...
I mean, were you able to even like look back and like gauge their distance, or were you just head down till you couldn't hear them anymore?
I could look underneath my armpit behind me, as you do when you're on a busy road, but I couldn't get up and turn my head around because I would have lost some of the speed that I had. So I would look underneath my armpit behind me, put my head down, and these dogs weren't giving up. So I kept going, and eventually... they didn't even give up. They got so tired that they slowly but surely, until the fifth one did this, they got so tired that they fell and started somersaulting on the road.
No
because,
kidding.
Because they didn't catch me. They didn't just pull off the side of the road and walk,
oh my God,
walk into the grass. They got so tired they started somersaulting on the road.
So this is out, were you on the like complete middle of nowhere then? I mean,
so I was
no
out,
houses or anything?
So there was a house about every 6 to 8 miles, and it was kind of a little shady house with a couple extra rusty old cars in the driveway.
Right.
And I was pretty petrified about this, so I took an alternate route back because I didn't want to run into this instance again. And arriving back into civilization of Scottsdale, I didn't even go home. I went straight to the bike shop, and I asked the folks at the bike shop, what's the deal with these dogs chasing after cyclists? It's not cool. And they said to me, were you on the east side of the highway? And I said, I was. And they said, man, you can't be going over to that place. Those are wild dogs and coyotes and wolves that have mated with that have reproduced with the Native Americans' animals. And they're just wild, untamed beasts. And it was a Native American reservation where these animals were living.
Oh, right on. Yeah. And so they'd obviously, if they'd heard of these then, but there wasn't, they didn't put postings up on their bike shop walls, don't go here.
There was no postings. There was no warning signs.
They were aware of it, though.
They were aware of it. There was no cyclist signs anywhere. And they told me that multiple times over the past 10 years that they have gotten cyclists and eaten them and killed them.
Oh, wow. Like legit devoured cyclists.
Devoured cyclists for a meal like you would see a lion doing to an antelope in the middle of Africa.
How did you sleep that night?
I was tired. Yeah. I had never done that much of a time trial in my entire life to escape these things. And my heart rate monitor was going off the whole time. I was just going through the roof with my heart rate. And
just praying not to get a flat tire.
Praying not to get a flat tire. Praying that more weren't coming out. And they were not.
Oh, sure, right. Yeah, I mean, there's a chance that there was more packs ahead, right?
More packs ahead. More crazy houses with more dogs along the way.
Yeah.
And it was just very scary. And it was by far the most scared I've ever been in my life. And part of the scariness was I didn't know what to expect or what the outcome was going to be. So I just had to pedal real hard for as long as I could until these guys gave up.
Yeah. Never to the east side again.
Never will I ever bike on the east side of the highway ever again.
Yeah. I mean, growing up in the country, there were certainly lots of houses that had dogs, and we would know about them. I mean, obviously this story puts my recollection of similar instances to shame, but there was this one house in particular, and it was actually towards the top of this long hill, and they had a dog, so you couldn't really get up the speed you wanted to try to blast past the house, because the goal was always like, you're getting close, you'd ride as quiet as you could, you'd almost get there, and you just pedal as hard as you could, on the outside of the road, away from the house, and then their dog would come flying out at you, but you'd usually get, you know, 150 yards, 200 yards down the road, and they would give up, and that was the case. But
exactly.
This one house, though, had this Doberman, and the thing would not, I mean, it just looked vicious. This was the time of Magnum P.I. with Apollo and Zeus, yeah. And, you know, so it was already ingrained in my head that if these dogs got me, I would be dead, but yeah. I probably wouldn't have been dead. I would probably have been mauled, but you certainly would have not been here for this podcast.
Yeah, exactly. I've heard a lot of instances like that, and I've been chased by a lot of dogs, but they're lazy dogs that only will chase you for 10 yeah. or 15 seconds and then they give up.
Well, they're just trying to chase you away. They're not actually trying to get a meal for the family.
Exactly.
That's so messed up. Yeah, no fun. I mean, that's definitely one of my biggest fears. Like, we were on this recent Colorado trip, and you know, maybe I just have an active imagination, but you see these videos of mountain bikers and a bear chasing them down the mountain or something like that. Oof. And like, by far, that's one of my biggest fears, is being tracked down and overtaken by some beast like that.
Yeah, not enjoyable.
No, would not be my choice. But enough on that. So after you were in Arizona, and you moved out to Maui, what was the next phase of the nomad life?
So following Maui, I decided that I liked the Maui life and the surf culture and the mountain biking and the kite surfing, but Maui started getting a little bit pricey for my liking. I was trying to more dial in the less work, more activity lifestyle. And a couple of my friends from Maui who were pro windsurfers told me that if you want to get good at wind sports and have really epic mountain biking, is move to the Baja Peninsula of Mexico. So
La Paz area?
In between La Paz and Cabo San Lucas.
Oh, right, sure, yeah.
Right on the east coast on the Sea of Cortez, yep. Which was a kite surfing mecca and a mountain bike mecca. And I started living there and was kite surfing and mountain biking.
Such a I love it down there. When I lived in L.A., I was lucky. It was a short flight down to Cabo. So I would go down yep. to Cabo, then rent a car and go up to Todos Santos and stay there. So I've been yep. there a good handful of times. But
yep, just a beautiful place. The Walmart family is dumping tens of millions of dollars into a mountain bike trail system there. And they have mountain bike resorts in the town that I live. So the mountain bike trail infrastructure is primo.
All right. It's back on the top of my list to get back there then, for sure.
It's a good place. Everybody so, should go.
So you were down there kiteboarding and doing some snorkeling and scuba diving. Diving as well too.
Yep. Swimming with the whale sharks when the wind was down, and riding my bicycle until the wind came up, and then as soon as the wind came up, we'd get off our mountain bikes and get out in the water.
Were you primarily mountain biking then there, or were you still road cycling as well?
Primarily mountain biking. Mountain biking.
Yep, right on. And any fun stories while you were in Mexico, or any? I mean, it can be pretty desolate there. One of my fears, if I was to add up my fears, right, it's another one would be to be out in the middle of some arid desert and run out of water and not be able to find my way back. You ever have any instances like that? Or
I linked up with a couple old salty mountain bikers who were former professional riders. One of the guys who finished fifth overall at the Leadville 100 trail race. Oh, wow. He was 59 years old, and it was always playing catch up with him. So he would take me on these rides out in the middle of the desert that were so far out of my scope that I was just like a dog with my tongue hanging out the side of my mouth. Yeah. And this guy would take me on 5-6 hour bike rides up in the middle of the mountains and just crazy places with rattlesnakes and cactuses and lots of thorns. And I was just crashing and going over the handlebars of my bike, and he was just sitting there twiddling his thumbs waiting for me. But because of that, I got in really, really, really good shape and became a better mountain biker and explored all of the trails that the Baja had to offer.
Right on. Yeah, that's great. How long were you in Mexico then?
I was there for 2 winters for about 6 months each time.
Yep. And in between, where were you in the summers?
Portland, Maine in the summertime, making
awesome.
Money,
yep.
And La Ventana, Mexico in the winter.
And not a bad way to go.
Not too shabby.
Yeah. So, but you're going to be, this is your first winter back in snow country, right?
First time seeing snow in 15 years.
Wow, that's nuts, man, for a New Englander.
Yeah.
You know? how are you feeling about that right now?
I'm pretty excited. I'm upping my flannel shirt game and my boots and my wool socks, and I got a winter wetsuit, and I'm looking at a fat tire bike, and just trying to build up the activity portfolio to get through it all.
Yeah, and you just doubled down on it by getting a home on wheels. It's parked outside the studio here.
Yep, I got a 1997 Ford ambulance that I've been living in for about 4 months. Previous to that, I was living in a van for about a year and a half before that, but I decided to drive that down to La Ventana, Mexico, and that's my Mexico home. So I'm a dual homeowner, one in Mexico and one in Maine, which is my home and my daily driver.
It's everyone's dream, right?
Yeah.
Couple houses.
A diesel beast with a lay on the front and going to have a roof patio on it very soon and can't complain.
And sirens and lights and everything still work?
Lights, sirens, PA system, got it all.
Right on. Those big those surf adventures, you know, it's really going off. You can let people know that where you're heading, right?
Exactly. With a propane heater and a hot water shower for post-surf sessions.
All right. Well, we'll have to be hanging out in February then for sure.
I'll be there.
Yeah. I mean, that actually reminds me of one of the things when I was a kid, too, was like you get comic books and on the back page of the comic book was like these things you'd send away for or whatever. And you'd get that little yellow siren you could like attach to your handlebars of your bike. And it would like police and fire. An ambulance, and I had the PA, and man, did I want one of those as a kid. I don't think I ever got one, though. I don't recall getting one. I just remember always wanting it.
Yeah, you got to have the sirens. I pulled up to the surf break in Old Orchard Beach 2 days ago, and some of the surfers who are gearing up to go out were all nervous that an ambulance was pulling up. They thought someone had an issue out in the water. And then when I got out, they said, oh, you're not an ambulance driver. You just drive an ambulance. So everything's okay. I was nervous for a sec.
That's fair. I mean, yeah, you make sure that people don't come rushing to you for paramedic help.
Yeah, it definitely looks the part.
It does. Yeah, that's great, though. It's exciting. I'm kind of jealous of it, to be honest. But so you were in Mexico, back to Maine, back to Mexico, back and forth. But this epic cross country bike trip that I saw a lot of photos of. What was the story behind that?
Yeah, so just always trying to progress with the adventures and the movement and the fun times to be had. I decided when I was in Mexico that I would go on an epic cross country adventure, and in doing so, I would start in San Diego and go along the southern part of the country, given the season that it was, which was March would be the starting date. And I just always seen in National Geographic and on movies and just all of these things that seemed like the adventure of the lifetime is going on a bike trip, which for me is camping is one of my favorite things. Riding a bicycle is one of my favorite things. And combining it all together is one of my favorite things. So I decided on March 2nd, I would embark on an adventure starting at Dog Beach, San Diego, and start pedaling across the country solo. And
is this 2020 or
2021.
Okay, it was just this past year. Okay. Yeah.
Yep. So I caught a ride. I left my van down in Mexico, said goodbye to that, caught a ride up in someone else's van to San Diego, jumped out, stayed a night, got my bike all ready for the adventure, and then started pedaling. And I started it out going solo. And along the way, I met people. And at one point, my bicycle group grew from being just me to 13 people at some times. I met 78-year-old couples who were on tandem bicycles. I met one guy who 1 year prior weighed 100 more pounds than he did at the moment.
Oh, wow.
And he was joining the crew. And when I first met one person on the bike trip, I said, I don't know about cruising with you. I think I'm just going to do my own thing. This is a bike trip all about me. But we just kept picking people up along the way. If they were cool, they'd stay on board. If not, they'd...
It's like the scene in Forrest Gump, right?
Exactly. I mean, it was exactly that. We would say, hey, you want to come on? Want to come on board? And they would. And if they didn't like it, they would go off and do their own thing. Sometimes people would just join for a day. Sometimes people would join for a week. And I pedaled with a couple people who I met for over 3,000 miles who came across the country with me.
Wow. Right on.
And then up the coast all the way to Maine, stayed at my parents' house. We fed them lobster dinners and made it happen.
Yeah.
So all in all, it was a 5,250-mile bike ride.
Damn. How many days?
79 days with all our rest stops.
Yeah, yeah.
And just lots and lots of adventures in that itself along the way. Pedaling through Texas. I love Texas, but those drivers in Texas did not love us cyclists. We had good amount of run-ins with motorists in Texas, and
like actual verbal altercations.
That I was wondering when they were going to come at me physically, just for us riding a bike.
That's unfortunate. Jeez.
It was unfortunate. Yeah, yeah. But on the flip side, more often than any bad things that happened was when we would be at a grocery store, people would come up to us and ask us if we wanted to sleep over at their house, and they'd cook for us and
give us
tours of their churches and communities and restaurants they owned and bars that they owned. And it was just a really good experience on humanity and seeing how far random strangers would go out of their way to help cyclists.
Oh, that's really great.
And it really made me excited about cycling, because if I was in a car, people wouldn't approach you to come stay at their house.
Of course not.
And help you out and do nice things.
Yeah.
But as soon as you're hiking or on a bicycle, you're more unthreatening and people are into helping you out and showing you hospitality.
Yeah, there's probably an aspect too that people might look at what you're doing and admire it too, right? I mean, admire the fact that they're not doing it, or they wish they could maybe, and be like, well, I can be part of this in a way by being charitable or friendly.
Everybody wanted to help us out in some way or another, and it was funny because a lot of people on the trip would say, oh man, I would love to do that, but I'm too old for that. And I said, how old are you? And they'd say, oh, I'm 62. And I'd say, well, these people on the tandem bicycle next to me, they're 78, and they've pedaled on that bicycle alone over 20,000 miles. So don't give me the I'm too old thing, because you're not too old. These people are 15, 16 years older than you. But it was good to see everybody was always up for talking to us and helping us out and showing us a good time and giving us recommendations. And it was just really cool. I was staying in really fancy hotels sometimes. I was camping out in homeless person communes out in the middle of Arizona with people who arrived there jumping on the backs of trains. I was camping out at friends' houses from college and friends of friends and friends' relatives, and just lots of hospitality in so many shapes and forms.
That's so rad. Was there any, I'm sure there were, but any points along the ride that you might want to throw in the towel on anything?
There was definitely a couple times, not a lot, but there was definitely a few times that I was thinking about throwing in the towel when I was biking over some large mountain passes in New Mexico. It was snowing and raining and snowing and raining. And there was one day that I got snowed on 3 separate times and I got rained on 3 separate times.
Oh.
And I woke up and the wind was blowing about 40 miles an hour and it was blowing so hard that it blew all of the rain underneath the tarp of my tent. And then I got out onto the road just cold and hungry and tired.
Miserable,
physically and mentally.
Yeah.
And then it started snowing at the top of a mountain pass. And then you'd go down the mountain into warmer climate and it would just be raining on you. And then you'd climb another mountain and it would be snowing on you. And it was out in the middle of nowhere and it was scary and cold and gray and people were honking at us. So that was pretty miserable, but I think that was the only day that I really thought
about.
And you weren't
solo at that point during that section.
I was solo at that point.
Oh, were, yeah. So the mental game too. You didn't have anybody to like keep pushing you along.
I had no one to complain to. I had no one to talk to. And it was just complete misery out in the middle of nowhere with no cell phone service and no end in sight. And after getting rained on for 4+ hours, your rain gear doesn't work anymore.
Right.
So it just soaks right through. But that was the only day of the whole trip that I really questioned myself. And after that, it was a really good rock bottom for perspective.
Yeah, sure.
Because every day after that,
78 days of not as bad.
78 days of not as bad. The weather got warmer. The people got friendlier.
Yeah.
Everything was just always constantly improving. And it really was a good positive perspective to get on life of, it can only get better.
Yeah, so it's a good way to take things. I mean, that's the thing about most adventures, right? It's not just necessarily the purity of the adventure that you're taking away. It's the lessons you learn or how to persevere through those harder times, right?
Exactly. The hard times make the good times that much better.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's why we abuse ourselves here in Maine by surfing in the winter, right?
Exactly. Yeah, it makes the summer feel just luxurious.
Absolutely.
So on the bike ride, I decided I would pedal from California to Florida. And if I was having a good time, then I'd keep going. And
yeah, so Yeah, so we had a starting point in at Dog Beach in San Diego, but your end point wasn't necessarily Maine? Or
my end point was not Maine. My main goal was to get to St. Augustine, Florida.
Okay, yep.
And not really any time schedule or anything like that, but I really wanted to bike from the West Coast to the East Coast, mm-hmm. dip my back tire in the water over there and dip my front tire in at St. Augustine.
Yeah.
And if I was having a good time from there, then I was going to keep going. And along the whole way, the more that I rode, the more I wanted to ride. And when I got to St. Augustine, Florida, it was 75 degrees out, warm out, right. clear, sunny, lots of restaurants, lots of water. Everything was just ideal. I was just getting warmed up. I was just getting my bearings at that point.
Yeah, right on, yeah.
And at that point, I had probably 8 or 9 people on the pack. And
So what was the name of your pack? You were mentioning earlier names of your bike gangs or whatever.
So we had the bike gang of the Iron Taint Crew.
Okay, sure.
After biking through all of the elements for a couple of months, we had our logo of the Iron Taint Crew, where we have bumper stickers. And so we were called the ITC for short and more politically correct to speak to strangers about. So we had the ITC was going pretty hard in St. Augustine, and we decided we might as well just keep going.
Yeah.
And along the way, we met people out on the West Coast. We were staying with people who we met in New Mexico who had friends along the bike route in Virginia and Washington, D.C. And just the hospitality was shown through all the way from the West Coast. We were staying at friends of friends' houses who we had no idea who they were, who were 4,000 miles away from where we met their friends. And people were reaching out and picking us up in their vehicles and cooking for us all the way across the country.
Oh, that's such a great... Did you document this too? I mean, you took some photos along the way, but any more documentary level stuff?
No documentary stuff other than just lots and lots and lots of photos and videos and some small interview captions with the ITC members.
Yeah, right on. I mean, that's the one thing. It's like you're riding over 5,000 miles, like to add on top of it the technical aspect of like, oh, we got to get that shot again. All right, everyone go back down the hill, start riding back up, right?
There was lots of opportunities for lots of shots of everything, of all the activities on the bike and off the bike. And we had a crew ranging from, like I said, we had the 78-year-olds on the tandem bicycle, and we had 2 19-year-olds as well, and all ages in between.
Oh, that's so great. 60-year difference between them.
Exactly.
That's so amazing. And so then you decided to just head towards Maine because that's probably where you're heading eventually, right, for the summer.
Yep, I was coming back to Maine for the summer, and the weather was getting better, and summer was on the way, and I convinced everybody along the trip how amazing Maine was and how the East Coast was. And eventually I had 6 people who were interested and committed to coming to Maine with me.
That's
and
great.
None of the people who came to Maine with me had the intent of continuing the bike trip or coming to Maine. And by the end of it, we had 6 folks all heading to New England.
Right on. And after that lobster dinner at your folks' place, then what happened to those other 5 or 6 people?
So the rest of the people called it at Portland, Maine, and they had their spouses come pick them up and go back to where all the places they came from.
Yep.
And I decided to go visit my brother up in northern Maine outside of Bangor. So I had 2 more cycling days from Portland, Maine.
Wow, that's amazing. That's really great. Now that you've done that, do you feel like you've scratched that itch for now, or are you ready to do it again?
Anytime I have a spare moment in my day, I'm always planning or researching other bike trips around the world. And we have a group chat with the ITC members, and they're all just shooting off all kinds of potential routes around the world that we want to do. One of the guys is on a bike adventure, a German guy who is solo bike touring down in the Patagonia.
Yeah.
So he's biking down through Chile and Argentina, and we're trying to get a crew together who are going to do a bike tour in Europe.
Oh, right on.
Starting in Sicily.
Oh, right on. And are you thinking for 2022 or 23 or no real timetable, you just when it happens?
As soon as we can make it happen
and have
as many people from the ITCs in the in on the adventure.
Yeah. Do you take any applications for the ITC?
Just a verbal interview and their passion for bicycles.
Got it.
And other than that, we're pretty low key.
Yeah.
As we have a 60 age range of the riders, but as long as they're cool and you can travel with them and they're low key and they're fun and happy to be around, then we're cool with bringing them on.
That's great. I love it. I mean, and Sicily's an amazing starting location for another adventure for sure.
Definitely. Yeah. I hear great things about the bike touring over in Europe. And so everybody just always is talking about how pleasant it is. So now that we ticked off the box of the United States bike tour, then the next best thing would be over to Europe down to South America.
And so for now, you're going to work on the ambulance home. Do you have a name for it yet?
No name for the ambulance yet, unfortunately, but still taking applicants for that and deciding what it will be. But just making the ambulance more livable and more ideal for the winter season, and get some ski racks on it and get a heating system in there and just keep making that better, and getting an ice luge for it and a better sound system, and get everything all freshened up for that and just get that ready.
That sounds pretty fantastic. And you're going to spend the winter working at this 9-to-5-ish job and enjoying every hour outside of there.
Exactly. Just work as much as I can, save as much money as I can for more bicycle adventures.
Yeah, that's really great. All right, so I mean, obviously you're diehard cyclist. I mean, that's pretty fair to say, right? I mean,
I would say so.
Could you see yourself ever not riding a bike?
I don't think so. I always want to ride a bike until the end of my life. The people, the 78-year-olds on my bike tour, were serious college athletes and competitive runners and swimmers and very, very, very talented athletes. And they said the only thing that they can do at this age is keep riding a bicycle with no pain and still the same enjoyment factor as they did when they started when they were 8 or 10 years old. So I hope to follow exactly in their footsteps and just have an arsenal of 15 to 20 bicycles in the garage and keep riding my bicycle until the day I die.
Yeah, right on. I mean, having that kind of inspiration is so great to have. But what if you could only have one more bike the rest of your life? What would that bike be?
I think at this point in time, I would have the bike that I brought across the country on my bike tour. I have so much sentimental value in it. I've ridden it on trails, ice, snow, rain, potholes, just so much sentimental value in it. And it's such a comfortable, great rig that I am obsessed with it. I don't ever want to let it go. I want to just keep building it out for the future and make sure I always have that with me forever.
And what is it?
It's a Salsa Timberjack mountain bike. Yeah. And I have road touring tires for it, and I have mountain biking tires for it, and I have racks and bags for it. Yeah. And I love that bike from the bottom of my heart.
And she have a name?
She does not have a name, unfortunately. I need to get her a name, but I just have so much passion for that bike and so much respect. And I talk to the bike and I have dreams about the bike, and I need this bike in my life forever.
Yeah, right on. That's great. I think that anybody who has a bike that already is in your possession that you could see is the one you'd want for the rest of your life is a pretty awesome spot to be in, and sounds like a pretty good note to end things on. But before we go, is there anybody you want to say hi out there to? Maybe the Taint crew or anything you want to plug?
I just want to say thank you, Salsa, for making such a bomb-proof, amazing vehicle to transport myself around the country and Mexico on for so long. And shout out to all of the homies, men and women, of the Iron Taint crew and everybody else who contributed to the bicycle adventure of us and of myself.
That's really great. And then if anybody wants to see any of those photos, are they able to find anything online anywhere?
Yeah, you can follow me on Facebook or on Instagram. My name is Maui McClamberger on the Instagram, and there's more than enough photo of the documented adventure across the country.
Right on. That's awesome, man. Well, thanks so much for your time today. Pleasure to sit down and hear all these stories. And I feel like we could probably talk for another couple hours. There's all these nuggets of stories in between. But I appreciate your time today. And thanks for being here.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Awesome. Great, great. Well, anyone out there, do you have any bike stories you'd like to share? I'd love to hear from you. You can learn a little bit more at iRideABike.com. Send me a message. You can also follow along on Instagram at iRideABike. And as always, your support and listening along is so greatly appreciated. Reviews on Apple go a long way. And until next time, ride safe and ride happy.
Yeah, man, that's good. Yeah.
everybody should ride bicycle.